time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B. has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Great show today, great topic, the anatomy of a successful plant. And some of you are going, wait, plants, why do I want to know about them? Well, you know, that oxygen exchange, carbon dioxide, that breathing factor, that could be one of them. But for those of you that are gardeners, those of you that just love having plants, flowers, vegetable gardens, today's show will help you with all that. When I was at Rutgers, you know, I have a few different degrees. One of them is in botany. I would sort of just live inside the greenhouses down at Rutgers because it was a place that, call it my escape. My escape was I can get into, you know, a place that I just love to be, love to learn. This show was brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So what I thought today is I would go through the parts of a plant, but as I'm going through the parts of a plant, I will make them relevant to, you know, your everyday lives. And we'd start at the bottom with the roots and go straight on up. Talk to you about a number of the organisms that are involved in the association between plants and animals. And just, you know, here we go. So let's start with roots. And let's start with the functions of a root. And the first thing is, roots, well, they anchor plants. So you're going, okay, so what does this mean to me? Well, if any of you are having water problems around your house, you see, this show covers everything. Well, I moved into a beautiful old home, and water was getting into the basement. So what I did is I graded the soil away from the house. So I had yards of soil, wheelbarrow, great workout, by the way, wheelbarrow. And once I had the soil graded, well, you need to have something to hold it back. So what do? You need plants, the roots to anchor that soil. So I put in beautiful perennial flowers. They're going to come back every year, but the roots stay all year long. And they actually anchored that soil there. Some people will go to sump pumps and hey, if that's going to alleviate your problem. My deal is, okay, let's go find the source of something. Let's go attack it. So I attacked it from the outside. And I'm going to let you know that that actually is something that has helped. But the anchoring of the plants with the roots was it. Well, the next thing is function of roots. They also absorb, store, and transport water and nutrients. And anytime I talk about nutrients somewhere, water and nutrients, they go together. Because a plant can't take in nutrients without taking in water. Well, give you an example of that one. Neighbor of mine, I live in an area where there's very few neighbors, but I noticed that there had skid steers, small little tractors, and there's two of them racing around in their backyard doing some work, racing around, but they have these huge oak trees there, and they were running over the soil on top, and I walked over, you know, after the guys were gone, chatting with my neighbors, good friends, and I said, you know about soil compaction? I said, no water's going to get to those roots unless they aerate the soil, and they're going, what? Well, you see, if you compact the soil around a major tree, so now I'm going to talk to you about, you know, you're having some work done, or maybe you're having a house built. You need to be careful as to where large, we'll call them dump trucks, tractors, wherever, trucks delivering lumber, wherever they drive, you want to limit that area because if the soil becomes compact, obviously you're getting no groundwater, water to get in the ground. And important, especially if you have a well system, it's called a recharge area. We need a recharge area. So we got to be careful with that one. And we always talk about roots grow toward a water source. And you say, okay, so this third function, what is that? Well, let's talk about watering your lawns. Many people have a sprinkler system. And if you ever notice that they go 7 days a week and they water and they're just going, well, if you don't water enough, roots tend to be shallow. And then during drought times of the year, the grass typically will die out. We need to get its duration and the amount of water. We need to get a longer watering period, all right? So it's a greater amount of water and to do it less times. So this way plants will be able to live through those drought times. So once again, a simple little thing, and the people are going, well, I want to learn about plants. Well, now some of you that want to learn about, you know, actually, here you go. If you want to learn about having a good lawn, you can go on to joeybee.tv, joeybee.tv, and you can go to Organic Gardening with Inspector Dave, great friend of mine. And Inspector Dave and I, we discuss how to properly water your lawn. Go into a few other things with nutrient uptake and all that, but it's just a great one to check out. And here's like, I always give you, here's that Jeopardy fact. And people say, okay, so what takes in the water and nutrients into a plant? People would say roots. Well, ain't wrong. The real answer would be root hairs. They're single cells that are on the roots, and it's their job to take it in, and then they put it inside the roots. Well, if roots are going to store water, well, that's important because they're going to store water and nutrients. So during those drought times of the year, they can actually pull something up. So we need to make sure that they are stored there. Now, there's different types of root systems. The main system that we're concerned about, and you probably say, oh, what's about a red oak tree outside your house? Or let's go into your garden and talk about a tomato plant. They're called fibrous root systems. And these root systems grow down and out as far as the crown. The crown is, think about if you were standing a distance away from an oak tree and you were looking at the tips of the branches on one side and you drew a line straight through, the diameter straight through to the other side, to the other tip, furthest branch, that would be the crown of the tree. So the roots actually grow down in as far as 3 feet in trees like that and out as far as the crown, and which means that they're going out in every direction. So some of you have this big old tree and you decide to put a patio in, and they're going, wow, the tree's not doing well. Well, if you put a patio in and the blocks aren't porous, allowing water, because they do make blocks now, you know, for your patios, where they're porous, where water will actually penetrate through, once again, that recharge area just for the tree's sake. So you need to, you know, just be aware that the roots are going down in every single direction. And you know this, if there's ever a severe storm, you see a huge tree blow over, and I call them pancake roots. It looks like this big old pancake that's there, the root system. Most of the roots, smaller roots have broken off that were headed out towards the crown. But you can see that it doesn't go down that far. So the actual anchor for that plant was, it's almost like you put your 2 feet together and somebody pushes on you and you go right over, or you make your legs a little wider. Now you have a bigger anchor, like my analogy there, and you're more stable that way. And the other type of root system are tap roots. They grow straight down. You would know this by, if any of you eat a carrot. A carrot, think about this. Here's a tap root going straight down. It's got all the water and nutrients inside of it. That's why you like it. But then those of you that are going, oh, man, I got dandelions all over my lawn. Well, guess what? I'm a little different. To me, dandelions, number one, they're pretty flowers, number one. I like them. Number two, again, I don't want 80,000 of them on the lawn, but I don't mind a few there and here and there. And then the leaves, wild animals eat. And I don't want to call myself a wild animal, but growing up, old Italian grandma, she would actually be growing lettuces in the garden, but then she would have her apron and she'd go on to all the neighbors' lawns, our lawns, and she'd be cutting the dandelion leaves, and she would mix our lettuces with, because the dandelion leaves, believe it or not, are a wild lettuce, and mix them together, and that was actually part of our salad. In today's society, and this is for everyone, with all the chemical that people spray, I would be very wary of going onto someone else's property and cutting their dandelion leaves, especially if you're walking around the neighborhood with a knife. Please be careful with that one. And also, here's a tough thing. You're doing organics, and your neighbors next to you are not doing organics. And, well, will some of that leach onto your property? The answer is yes. So you have to be just, hey, let's be careful with something like that. But we're going to come back to the different types of root systems in a little bit, and you'll see why. So now let's go to what we would call the transport systems in the stem of a plant. And there's three key words. Two of them are pretty big, even though they're small, the spellings of them, xylem, because xylem begins with an X. And I don't get this in our language. We got a word that begins with an X. It doesn't have its own sound, and it's got a Z sound. But xylem transports water and nutrients that dissolve upward. So it's going to take these nutrients from the roots and transport them straight on up. Well, think about this. You need to do organics in your garden, and you could be doing fish emulsion and kelp. And now watch how crazy this one is. You give your plant kelp. Well, it's good for roots and developing, especially young plants. It's good for developing roots. And it's also a stress reduction. And believe it or not, some plants could be, and I just use drought, could be insects. But plants do get attacked, and, they do go under stress. So kelp would help them tremendously. And then humans always go to me, well, can I drink some of that kelp for stress reduction? No. The kelp is for your plant. Grow a healthy plant, healthy fruit, and then eat it. No, you can't drink the kelp. And the other transport system, xylem was going upward, is phloem, and that begins with a pH. And the phloem transports food substances downward. And you're going, well, okay, so where's that going? Remember that root store of food and nutrients. Well, think about this one. For those of you that are big, we'll say breakfast people, and you just happen to love pancakes or waffles, the syrup that you're putting on it, when we tap into trees, we're tapping into the phloem, and that's what we're taking out. And I also would recommend making sure your syrup is real syrup, because if you're buying the, and I'll just use a name brand, no offense to them, but there's a million out there, the Aunt Jemima's of life, basically they are water and sugar, or if you look at the ingredients, they are sugar and water. But if you eat real syrup, costs more in a glass jar. And people say, well, I can't spend that much money, but it's 10 times sweeter than the fake stuff. It's healthy for you. It's got some nutrients inside of it. So you're putting less on because it's way sweeter. And I'll tell you this, you eat the real stuff, you'll never go back, but it comes back to the phloem side of there. And the last layer that we need to be concerned about there is the cambium layer. And the cambium layer is the alive layer that is actually making new xylem and phloem. Because think about this. If you were looking at, and by my home, I have 150-year-old oaks. You look at this monstrous tree and go, okay, so how much of it's alive? Believe it or not, if you were to peel off the bark, please don't do this. But if you were to peel off the bark, inside is the cambium, and it's making new xylem, new phloem, and on the outside it's making new bark. And that's it. That's the only alive part of a tree. And if you ever watch a beaver working and he's doing, the beaver damage, or if you watch him, he's not, people say, oh, the bark. Well, if you look, the bark's all on the floor of the forest. He doesn't eat it. He just scrapes away at the cambium and he gets the xylem and phloem as well. And that's his food. So you need to make sure that, you understand a little bit about the support system and the transport system, the stem part of it. And I just left the Chili Pepper Research Lab. I used to be the director of the Chili Pepper Research Lab. And when I was working inside there, we would be doing nutrients and water from below, getting them through the root systems, and a couple different polarity techniques. Some of them are top secret. Shh, can't tell you. And as we're doing these techniques, but if you know the word polarity, you might have an idea. Anyway, we would be very concerned about that transport of water and nutrients to flow from roots through the stems, and that's a piece of the puzzle, straight on up to the leaves. Well, before we get over to the leaves, let's just talk about the stems themselves, and there's two types. Some of the stems are made of wood, trees and shrubs, and they have this type of system, and most plants on earth are herbaceous, big old word. You know the word, people say herbs or herbs, but they're not herbs. Herb is a guy, herb is a plant that herb eats. Herbaceous stems are, this general thing is soft and green and can be bent. So if you think about something like your front lawn, your grass, soft and green, so it must be herbaceous stem, but just about most of the plants are this way. So you need to just understand that and the transport systems there. As we move on up to the leaves, and hey, the leaves produce food, and the big process, the word is photosynthesis and all this. And I often describe it like if I'm ever, speaking to our youth somewhere, and I always said, well, how cool could this be? And I find a window, I'm talking, the sun's shining in, and I go, how cool would it be if I could just put my hand by this window while I'm talking to you and make some food? Well, it doesn't work that way. But leaves have the ability through photosynthesis, chlorophyll, the green compound, all that, of making some food. Well, that's an important deal. And the other side is this. If you ever look at a leaf, there's two sides, and obviously it makes sense, top and bottom. And the top side is where all of this is going on, all the photosynthesis. And there's a waxy layer, waxy cuticle on the top of that leaf. And it's actually there for this. It is designed so that it's a protection, so the leaf doesn't dry out. And some of you are going, well, I might be. And you do, because you could see the coloration. It's typically darker on the top side than the bottom, and that's part of the waxy cuticle. For those of you that have ever taken an apple and you've shined the apple, so to speak, you polish the apple on your shirt before you take a bite into it. Why people do this, I don't know. But anyway, some people do. That's actually the waxy cuticle that you're shining up. You could scrape it with your fingernail there on the apple. But you could also do that real slightly. It depends on how thick the leaves are, because some are pretty thick. I probably wouldn't try this with a cacti leaf, with the spines in it. But you're getting my point about that waxy cuticle. And on the bottom side, this is a cool part. On the bottom side, microscopically, there are these openings. The openings are called stomates, and plural, they're stoma. And there are two cells next to it. And all this is microscopic, and you can look under a scope. And you probably, I'm sure you know by now, you can go to YouTube and you can see anything in the history of the world on YouTube. But it really is a cool process. But the first cool process is, I'm sure you know that this show is brought to you by Tranquility Mountain Backpacks. And have you seen the new Joey B Signature series of backpacks? If not, hey, go to TranquilityMountain.com. This is where adventures begin. But if you go back to the underside of that leaf, if there is a drought, and this is the cool thing, the guard cells, I'm doing this, I always do this with my fists. The guard cells, my fists go together, and they keep that stomate closed. They don't let any water out. So if there's a drought, plant doesn't want to lose water, the stomates are closed by the guard cells. Henceforth, they are guarding the opening. That's the way we describe that. And now, let's just say that it is raining so much outside right now. Your big oak tree has so much water. And if I just said to you, keep drinking water, you're going to go, I have to go to the bathroom, I got to go potty. Well, guess what? The tree can't say that. But what happens is, and this is what I think is so cool, doesn't have a brain, but chemically it knows it and goes, excuse me. And now all of a sudden the guard cells open up. Now the stomate is open and it lets the water out. And you see, when it lets the water out, now watch how cool this is. And this is why I talk about having plants around your house and how plants prevent flooding. You go, what do you mean plants prevent flooding? Well, the more plants you have, because even your front lawn is going to transpirate some water going out, but it lets it out as a gas. So which direction is it going in? So if it rains hard by your house and all the plants are taking water in, and hey, they're going to take the water they need, they're going to store the water they need, and the rest of it, they got to get rid of it through their leaves, and they let it out as a gas, so it's going upward. Now, if you have a big old oak tree outside your house, think about this. It could transpirate 100 gallons of water an hour. That's a heck of a lot of water. So if you have a bunch of trees, bunch of shrubs, bunch of plants, front lawn, whatever you have, and now all of a sudden it's transpirating water, it's taking water away from your property. So that is, you know, if you think about it, that is one of the key things that will help you prevent flooding around your house. Now, let's go to flowers of a plant. People say, hey, me included, I love flowers. They're beautiful. Well, they're going to attract pollinators. And some right away, people are going, well, I don't like bees. And I'm going to get to bees in a few minutes. Well, guess what? We need bees. Bees are a great pollinator. And I'll touch on that in a little bit. But the two things that attract pollinators to a flower, it's one or the other. One of them is scent, the smell of it. So it's the fragrance. And the other is color. So if you want to attract many different types of pollinators, and I'll speak to you about a number of them, you want to attract them, well, you want to have many different fragrances, many different flowers, and many different colors. Because you see, sometimes the same variety of a plant will flower in a different color. So you can have sometimes the same fragrance, but different colors attracting different pollinators. Well, so here you go. I'm going to give you a list. Bees are number one, and I'm going to talk to you in a few seconds about the different types of bees. Yes, there are different types. Insects. Well, we have crawling insects. We have flying insects. They're important. Bats. There are some bats that actually just pollinate flowers, so important. There are some birds, butterflies, moths, depends on the nights. And believe it or not, the male mosquito, because female mosquitoes are the ones that bite. You're going, well, why? Well, female mosquitoes biting you because before an insect can lay eggs, they need protein. And no, a mosquito does not want your blood. They're looking for the proteins that are inside your blood. But male mosquitoes do not bite. They actually will go to a flower looking for the nectar in a flower, and they're pollinators. And the last two are wind and water. And the way that you know about the wind is if you ever look at rows of corn in a field, they're grown at 3 feet apart. And you go, well, why 3 feet? Because the tassels, the flowers on the very top, as the wind blows, they will move from side to side and pollinate the columns. So just something for you to think about. Some plants have both male and female parts on the same flower, and some plants have separate male and female parts. I don't really think you need to get into this too much unless, for example, you're doing something, say you want to experiment, and one of my favorite fruits, where I grew up, I used to have a blueberry bush in the backyard. It was so cool because I'd wake up in the morning, I'd go outside, I'd have to wrestle with the squirrels to fight away, but I'd go out and pick fresh blueberries, come back in, put them on my cereal. Well, blueberries actually have separate male and female plants, you know, and this is just how life goes. But now you can actually buy a plant, and the word is grafting. You can actually get a stem of one plant onto another plant. And you need to read when you're, you know, you're in a nursery that sells plants, not kids. Gets my little humor, by the way. But you need to talk to the nurseryman or look on the container, and it'll tell you that it has both male and female flowers, so that then it was grafted on. And one of the old Italian guys that I used to go see, because I used to learn so much from Mr. Ferracco, and I'd go up there, and on a specific pear tree, he would graft on, and you'd see like 3 and 4 different types of pears growing on one tree. So grafting is a technique that you can do that. So it's just pretty neat to see that part of it, but that's something that you need to know. And if you're in a nursery and they don't have a plant with both parts on it, then you're going to actually have to buy 2 different blueberry bushes, a male and a female. And they're not the only ones, but I just thought I'd give you that example of that. So you need to understand that piece of it. So now let's go to bees and let's talk a little bit about honeybees. Now, we've got a major problem with honeybees in our country right now. They are dying at great amounts. There's a colony collapse disorder, and the scientists have been studying it so many different ways and trying to figure out. Well, we're figuring out that one of the ways in which bees are dying en masse, think about this. We have bee farmers, and this is not an exaggeration. They will load them in tractor trailers, like amazing amounts of hives, and you happen to be a whatever type of farmer, and you actually rent the bees. So I am the bee guy, and I drive my tractor trailers, unload the bees, have them on your farm for X amount of time, usually 2 or 3 weeks, and then I load the bees back up because I have my next place to go to, and the bees are dying en masse. That means by the millions, they're dying. Well, one of the things we now know is farmers that are not using organics, which happens to be most of America, by the way, farmers are spraying pesticides, and the pesticides, specifically Roundup, which is sprayed probably on every single farm in America, and then we've got weeds that are becoming disease pesticide resistant, and then all of a sudden we come up with Roundup 2 and 3 and 4. And it's not, by the way, I'm not just knocking Roundup, but that's the key one I know that is sprayed on just about every farm in America. Well, it's killing off the bees. Well, we need to do something. And organics, and you know, I prophesize this, and you'll hear a couple shows with my buddy Inspector Dave, the organic gardener guy. He's brilliant at what he does, and it's easy and cheaper to be organic. Like if you're going to go turn your lawn over to organics, one of the products you could use is Wow by Gardens Alive. And no, I don't get any money from them, but it's called Without Weeds. And you can use a gluten-based product and you can put that on your lawn and take care of the weed problem there. You can go to Total Organics in your garden. It is absolutely cheaper and safer to use. And now, can farmers on a larger scale do this? Well, yeah. Hey, you can go to the grocery store and you notice that. If you ever noticed the last couple of years that organics, the sections in your local grocery, like a large grocery store, a ShopRite or whatever you go, your Piggly Wiggly around the country, wherever you're going, your Food Lines, Albertsons and out west. Well, you're going to these places and you notice that this section in there is of organics is growing because organic farmers are growing. So if you can turn over to organics, then we're getting guys that are basically taking care of our bees. And one of the cool things, and I will do a show just on honeybees, but you should also know that honeybees are not native to our country. And most people think, yeah, they must be. The native bee is the mason bee. And you can actually, you know, honeybees go in that huge hive that we know. What you've seen, or the boxes, if you've seen commercial farmers using honeybees. Well, mason bees actually are in these little tubes. Really cool. And you can go online to Territorial Seed, Gardeners Alive. There's a million of them. And you can actually have mason bees shipped to your home. And you could also have their nest, you know, it's a nesting box, shipped to your home and raise mason bees too. And people say, oh, why would I want bees? You know, honeybees and mason bees, they're so docile. They could care less. Think about this. My name, Joey B. I am allergic to bees. When I go out in the wild, we film in the wild, I've got an EpiPen with me in case I get stung like in the neck and I can't breathe. Some people say, well, they might like that to happen. I'm just kidding. I am around honeybees, like Inspector Dave's garden. I'll be there, and there's a bee highway, and this is the place that the bees go in and out of the hive. And I'm near the highway, and I'm around. I've even had bee suits on holding thousands of bees. No, I'm not afraid of them because honeybees and mason bees are very docile. They're gentle. Their job, think about this. They could either go to you or they could go to a flower. No offense to you. They prefer to go to a flower. But I will talk to you. I'll do a show specifically on bees because that is something that is just really, really neat. And you see, going back to the bees and all the pollinators on the flowers, well, obviously when they pollinate, they're going to get a fruit. And the fruit may be your tomato. It might be your pepper. It might be something in the wild. There's wild blueberries, one of my favorite things when I'm hiking along. I also say this, make sure when you're out in the wild that you're with someone who knows. Don't go start to pick on plants unless you know that it's an edible plant, because through, I guess, the millions of years, we have figured out what's wild. And again, we've obviously domesticated these things and, made them a little bit larger. Because, I talk to people about wild carrots, and especially little kids going, what do you mean wild carrots? And I pick one and I'll find it. And wild carrots are about 4 or 5 inches large, and they're white. And people go, that's not a carrot. I go, clean it off and here, taste this. Going, well, it tastes like a carrot. Well, of course. But think about this. Genetically, we have changed that carrot, over time, bang, 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 bang. And now we have carrots that are orange and they're larger. And, as we keep crossbreeding things and making them, they're also, you can order white carrots. They still, people go, oh, they must have turned a carrot from orange to white. No, they're originally white. But the culmination of all of this stuff is they are the fruits and vegetables that we get to eat, whether they are in our garden, come from a farm, or come from the wild. So you see, my topic today was the anatomy of a plant, but as we went through the anatomy of a plant, you realize there's an importance to growing them around your house to protecting yourself against some flooding issues, talking about how you can prevent your lawn from drying out and how to water them properly. Well, you think about all these different ways and methods, and some of you may have a question about this, and you could always tweet me at Joey B News. That's Joeybee News. You can maybe have a question, and I get this all the time. People say, well, how about you never spoke about, and they give me a topic. Or sometimes I'm speaking on one of my shows and they're going, well, you addressed this a little bit. Can you talk about it? And the answer is, yeah, because, it's what I do so well. It's really neat. It's early in the morning because I'm a morning guy. I'm sitting up in my studio, glass enclosed out here, and I'm just looking outside and I'm looking out at beautiful trees, countryside. And this is who I am. It's Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. So I think I need to get myself out of the studio and into the outdoors today. So everyone out there, have a great day. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's JOEYBE.TV. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. That was awesome.